Ann Korologos, thanks very much for taking the time to join me, and congratulations on your award for extraordinary leadership from the Anderson Ranch. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Amy. I really appreciate your being here. Yes, tonight is what we have annually, our recognition dinner. Traditionally, we recognize an artist of some consequence. It's Wangechi Mutu from Kenya and Brooklyn, Yale graduate, extraordinary young woman. And also local, semi-local, Aspen folks, Jan and Ronnie Greenberg, who are in the gallery and writing business on art. So I feel flattered to be part of it. Actually, I just guess I put in the miles at Anderson Ranch the last 6 years.
You were chairman of the board of trustees of Anderson Ranch from 2011 through last year. You stepped down last year. And in talking to some people at Anderson Ranch, one of the things that you put together was the Chairman's Choice Speaker Series. The people I talked to said it's just a remarkable program. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, there are two programs that are related. The Chairman's Choice Speakers Program came about when Enrique Celaya, who is a prominent artist in California and Florida, got the award last year in the sense that I paid for it. I funded it so that we would recognize Enrique not only as an artist, but his contributions to Anderson Ranch. He's long taught there, but about 2 or 3 years ago, he came to us, to the executive director, Nancy Wilhelms, and myself, and he said, a lot of my artists, a lot of the people who follow me, would like to come back the next year or two. So we said, why not? So he created a 3-year program where the same artists come over 3 years. And that gives the continuity, it gives the growth in the learning from him, it gives that relationship to develop even more, and really has been a maturing for the artists who are, again, fine artists when they begin, but to work with him and know they're going to work with him for 3 years. So that was the reason that I decided to both fund it and introduce him and celebrate him. That has continued. A little humor, they asked me to see if I'd like to fund it this year. I said, but I'm not chairman. And if it's chairman's choice, the chairman's choice gives you the flexibility, ask the next chairman. The program that is it's different from but related to is the Featured Artist Series, which when I became chairman, the previous executive director had been a Yale graduate and very well-known in contemporary art. And we ultimately brought in a new executive director, and everyone said, oh, what are we going to do? And that was sort of easy, and it may have been the most brilliant thing I did, which was obvious, which we have on the board Sue Hustetler, to name one, who is the editor and writer for Miami Art Basel and the other Art Basel magazines, and a known leader in contemporary art. And Sue had come on the board at my request, and so I asked her to create and chair a featured artist committee. So the artists you're seeing there of some note this summer have come out of that committee, and now the committee has 7 or 8 people. They know that world, and we really are very, very pleased with that program. So between the two, you have an opportunity for everyone in the Valley, and of course also through video coverage or whatever, everyone in the Valley to meet Marina Abramović or Bill Viola or Tom Sachs and others, some of whom then come back as visiting artists and work at the ranch. And I think what it's done, the ranch culture is the same, but these artists in that program created out of a board committee and then the Chairman's Choice Award really allow us to recognize those many collect or want to meet but not necessarily able to. So this really has been terrific. So thank you for asking that. It has been great.
Let's back up a little bit. Mm-hmm. What drew you and your husband to the Roaring Fork Valley?
I laugh because I grew up in New Jersey, but over many years I used to go to Santa Fe, and I always thought I would buy a home in Santa Fe. I did look there, but what you can get in Santa Fe, I had this dream of 40 acres, don't ask me why, and something no more than an hour from the airport, and where I could be and have sort of, you know, get inside myself a bit. As someone said to me, you want to think thoughts you never knew you had. And so it was hugely expensive to live in the near proximity of Santa Fe. So I went to Pinedale in Wyoming. I went to Dubois. I went to Sun Valley and Ketchum. In the meantime, I had been on the Aspen Institute board. And so I knew Aspen, but it wasn't what I was looking for. And a friend said, you've got to see Soper's Mountain Ranch in Basalt. And I said, oh. So it was August. We drove down, and we went around the bend on West Soper's Creek. And there was this 2,000-acre ranch with its original buildings owned by the Strang family prior to it being, quote, subdivided, which is a word I don't like. And it turned out that that was when I saw the mountain with snow on in August and the green lushness of that area. I said, holy cow, this is it. And so we bought, and I built, you know, a sort of funky, fun, simple house. I was the fifth house there. And I love it. And people would say, what are you doing down there in Basalt? What's wrong with us up here? And it was because, not to flatter myself, but I could spend 3 or 4 days before anyone knew I was here. And when you do get involved in the valley, which that's what Tom and I do, we want to be involved in the community, you need a little rest time. The other thing is I love Basalt. And I say to people, when you're in Basalt and you have a cup of coffee, you're a real person. Certainly in Washington, D.C., I'm just a number of people sitting around having coffee. So it's the idea of a community. I mean, those days, you know, the post office was right down here where Heirlooms was. There was no big post office. Two Rivers was there. Bernard's was there. And it just felt right. So that's how. And then it's been 25 years.
Yeah, it goes by pretty quickly here in the Valley. You were the Secretary of Labor under President Reagan.
That's right.
You've been Deputy Secretary of the Interior.
Mm-hmm.
Describe the journey from politics to art.
One would say it was a saving of my soul, but I've always been interested in art. You know, like most young girls or boys, we take art in class, mm-hmm. although sadly there's not as much arts education as there used to be. I've always loved drawing. I'm not good. But it just was something I liked. I guess I grew up in the era when you were taken to every museum that your parents ever knew or your teachers took you. And so, and I studied abroad, so I, you know, I went to the Louvre and all. So, you know, you traveled and you went into museums. And I always loved it. I wasn't smart enough to take art history, but I was an English literature major and then business. So fast forward, I went to a couple of art classes at American University in Washington. When we came out here, someone gave me a book on art because they knew of my interest, now looking back on it. Mm-hmm. And I started to buy art of many local artists here through the Basalt Gallery. I guess it was just an evolution of a, do we call it still a Walter Mitty fantasy? That's
sure, yeah. But for those who might not be familiar with Walter Mitty who are listening to this interview, describe that.
Well, it's that sort of a whimsy of I want to do something I've never done. You don't know you can do it, but you can. And you have this little dream that you follow. And the people who had the gallery suggested that maybe I wanted to buy it. And I had thought, well, maybe I can be a silent partner because I wasn't ready to quit everything I was doing to run a gallery. Mm. But to make a long story short, it was the between taking classes at Anderson Ranch, which I did in the late 90s in painting, and then my exposure to local artists and the like, it was building on my lifetime of looking at art and then finally doing a little more formal workshop. I didn't know that that would enable me to relate to the artists we represent the way it does because I stood before a blank canvas. Mm-hmm. And it's been often said that you, I know it's been said to me by one of the faculty at Anderson Ranch, Ann, you're thinking too much. My body language was so stiff. And just now when I was at the ranch, somebody made the point about making art. The worst thing you can do is to come in and think about it or plan it. What you should come in and do is start. And I think that is true. For whatever your expression is, just start, just begin and put it down, and then things happen.
I have studied percussion and hand drumming.
Mm-hmm.
And I studied in Glenwood, and I studied in Cuba. And I remember there was a person in class in Glenwood who was very good, but this person was always wondering what the count was. You know, well, what is that, a 4-4 or a 2-4 or 6-8? And the teacher would say, just, you have to feel it. If you think it too much, you'll lose the rhythm. And that was true, because if I ever started thinking about the rhythm, I would just flub up. So, well,
it's the exact same experience. You mentioned labor and interior, and let me hasten to add that the interior department was filled with art. And it was from when they had the conservation call. They did a lot of murals. They commissioned people to paint on the walls, these fabulous murals. So art was a big part. We also had a wonderful Native American store with the expression of their art. And so you don't think of that in government, but art and caring for our public lands are very close together because of the beauty of both. At labor, the same thing. If you look back at some of the people who have written about our history of labor and organized labor, you see an awful lot of when we became industrialized and then beyond. So art was an expression within the government in those departments.
And when you talk about art being a part of government, I think about in the 1930s, you know, about the projects, the photography and the other art projects, the theater projects that were paid for by the government.
Well, use one I was familiar with was the duck stamp. We commissioned artists to paint the duck stamp. It was a competitive situation. That was during my watch. And I actually got to meet some of the Western artists who I've now met yet again, but that was in 1983. We take it for granted what's around us, that is art. My goodness, without the artists who painted Yellowstone, the Bierstadts and Blumensteins and others, without Teddy Roosevelt, we would have never known, those of us who were on the elsewhere, would never have known what the Great West was like. So art was how we learned, and still do. I still do. So that touches me. The issue is, in your own life, do you pause enough to see the art around you? As Georgie O'Keeffe said, maybe if I paint a flower really big, no one will be able to not see it, you know, because if you see some small flowers, you may walk right by them. And I think that's what artists bring to us. But it has been such a part of learning about our country.
Your gallery in Basalt, the Ancor Logos Gallery, is lovely. And it seems to me that it is full of Western artists. Can you talk about how you decide which artists to show?
Well, I started collecting in Santa Fe when I was going there, thinking I might move there at some one point in the early 80s at the Meyer Gallery on Canyon Road. William Hook and Kent Wallace, two prominent Southwestern artists. And so I bought really large, wonderful paintings that still hang in Washington. That's what I like to live with. When I'm in my home, Western art, Western-themed art, Southwestern art, just makes me feel wonderful. The execution of that art is superb, just superb.
What do you mean by that?
The various techniques used, the painterly aspects of the art by the artist. It's more impressionism of these two artists in particular. It's good art. You don't have to wrestle, and I don't mean this critically. Some contemporary art needs to express something of somebody, and I'm all for that. And I do appreciate very contemporary art. But, you know, a gold-plated toilet doesn't do it for me, even though I may... Well, that was featured in the paper not long ago, and an installation, I think, at MoMA. I've stretched my mind by being at Anderson Ranch, let me say that, even though I was doing more impressionist landscapes in my second painting class. So when I had a chance with the gallery, its roots were in a lot of local artists of this area, and over about the first year, I kept some and let some go. And so my eye has always been for what I think is an expression of the region and the area that I love. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's wonderful art. The artists earn a living by painting. They're expressing themselves. And the thrilling, I think, thing we do is introduce artists not only to collectors, but to one another. So I think it began with my own eye in collecting. I had a cousin who painted very much realism of farms and things. So maybe as a child I was influenced, I don't know.
I kind of hesitate to ask this question because you seem to be very fair-minded. Do you have a favorite artist or two right now in 2017?
That's interesting. It's like asking someone who their favorite child is. I guess I would say the artist that needs me most. And it ebbs and flows. One, I tell the staff here, the wonderful people who work with us, if we're not selling an artist, why not? What are we not doing? And that's what I mean by need you most. Have we not gotten in touch with the right clients? Have we not given them the right social media communications? Or is it just not a fit? But that's one thing. So the one who needs you most. Now, all artists, like all of us, have our vulnerabilities and have our emotions and our needs. And I try and read that a little when we talk to them, as we get to know them. If somebody's going through a personal tragedy, a loss of family, that can affect their productivity or their art. If they're raising children, if they're changing galleries, if they're pressed because they're in a show. So I would say the one who needs me most, or those who need me most, and I try and be mindful of that. And you're right, I won't name anyone because it's different every day. I walk into the gallery. Right now, Dinah Warman has an exhibit, so I'm really excited about Dinah. She was just here for the opening. But then I walk around the gallery. I thought, oh, my gosh, that's a really terrific piece Gail Waterman did. Oh, my gosh, look what Heather Foster did. Now, a lot of these artists I buy or have bought before. That's a problem. My husband said when we started the gallery or made it with my name on it, his name, as well, he said, you know, Ann, let's remember you're selling now, not buying. You generally want to buy after your clients have had first go at it. And the reason is I like them. You know, I just plain like the art. But you do walk around and you move pieces around. You talk to the gals in the gallery and see what people are saying about the art and try and share that with the artists. And I think we're as much in the enthusiasm business for art and artists as we are in the helping hand business.
It sounds like your gallery is a reflection of you.
Very much so. And I'd like it to be that. Oftentimes, in fact, funny, we had a couple of, I can't remember who now, but probably Michael Kessler, a couple of more abstract artists, but of the West. Mm-hmm. And somebody well-known in Basalt kept walking by the window and said, what are you being? You're going to be an Aspen gallery? And it was like a stab in my heart. I said, no. Well, I don't want to be a glitzy contemporary gallery. I am of this genre of contemporary in the sense of a live artist producing wonderful work, but subject matter with this sort of Western theme. And we can have some abstract, as we do, but we aren't going over the deep end in some way to try and compete with Baldwin Gallery. They do incredibly well at what they do. Now, interesting is when you get a relationship with other galleries. It used to be years ago when there were fewer galleries and no internet, the galleries work together more and help one another. That's not as prominent today. But just in the past 48 hours, two gallerists from Aspen have called me with an idea for an artist that might be a better fit for us than for them. So I'm going to follow
that's great.
On that, which is the way it should be.
Ann Korologos, when you accept the award Thursday night, what are you going to say?
Well, first I'm going to thank a lot of people. It has been a great honor to be chairman. I was only on the board a year when I was asked to chair. And so I'll be thanking, obviously, the board. But I'll be making the point about leadership. I heard this, it's not unique with me or the person who told me, I don't believe, but that when you think about leadership, you have to remember that the frog did not get on the fence post by himself. And then I go on to say, this frog wants to talk about the people who helped. And Sue Hofstetler with her featured artist, but the board as a whole really, really worked well together. And they worked with the ability to have good governance, which we put in place, and also that they got to know the whole ranch, not just the public part, and that means the workshops and all. I'm a big believer that a group of smart people in a room are smarter than the smartest person there, the wisdom of the crowd, if you will. And so that's what we had, really. And I think it's lovely and fabulous, and I'm honored to death. It was the whole team, and likewise the staff. And Nancy Wilhelms, when she became, I selected her to be executive director, had her interview with a few of the board members. And she set the tone of a caring ranch, which we've always been, but also one that would have as its theme excellence in everything we did. You know, it was a tough time, but the ranch emerged because of the people. And now someone said to me last night at a reception, the ranch has kept its culture. And if you've been to the ranch or people listening have been to the ranch, yeah, it's these funky cabins, and it has this sort of spiritual quality to it when you step on the campus. But the activity there is extraordinary. The artists who come to work there, the visiting artists, not to mention non-artists like myself. And it has this wonderful feeling that hasn't been lost in its transformation to have the artists now who are internationally known, huge reputations coming to speak, a critical studies program, a partnership with Aspen Institute, a lot of people, particularly in Aspen, but in the Valley as a whole, see the ranch very differently. You know, it's 50 years old, but it was sort of a mystery. And
for a long time.
For a long time. And now what's happened is this developing knowledge of the ranch. And that's where I say its culture has stayed the same, but its reputation is now respected.
You're no longer chairperson of the Anderson Ranch Board of Trustees. You are chairperson emeritus of the Aspen Institute. And you are still on the board of the RAND Corporation. What's next for you now that Anderson Ranch is in the rearview mirror?
Do you know Carrie Hauser?
Colorado CMC.
College? Well, she has her eye out, thinks that she's the next thing. I laugh, not to be chairman, don't misunderstand, but I'm on an advisory board of CMC. And she was kidding me, and now I have time. And so Gino Rossetti here in town, the architect, and I are giving a reception for Colorado Mountain College in August. So I think that, one, I'm blessed to leave on a high with a job well done by everybody. And two, I'm still on the boards of Host Hotels and Resorts, Corporate Board, and Michael Kors, handbags and dresses and all. And that meets in London 5 times a year. I guess I'd like to sort of take a vacation, you know. I'd like to get up in the morning and read. I just cleaned out my studio, which has been housing boxes of papers and corporate things so that I can go back to trying my painting.
That's a huge step. I mean, I envision your studio filled with boxes, and now it's open and empty and ready for you to step in and paint.
Well, you know, I'm a believer in feng shui, I guess. Getting the boxes out of the way and reordering the studio as a studio, which is a marvelous space, I just didn't want to leave after it was clean. You know, you feel that energy coming through. And I like to read, and there's so many things yet to learn, so I'll still be supportive, obviously, of the ranch, tremendously supportive, and of the team there.
And it sounds like supportive of CMC.
I'm very supportive of CMC. I think what Carrie's doing, and of course my involvement with the Aspen Institute, Walter Isaacs, and the Isaacson Center. You know, this is a sort of a valley, but it's a small town. And I think the community activity is very important. That's why we're here.
Ann Koralogos, thank you very much for your time. And again, congratulations.
Thank you so much. This was fun.